Hello and welcome to the Bucket List Gamers podcast. I am Jay and as always I am joined by Eddie.
Hello.
And today we're looking at two games on our ever dwindling list. As we promised last week, we're actually following through with the promise. We're looking at number 49, which is Deus Ex, which came out in 2000 for the PC. And 56, which is Dungeon Master, which came out in 1987 for the Atari. Where do you want to begin?
Chronologically, so we go 1987, we'll go with Dungeon Master first, because I kind of feel like I've got less to say about that.
Yeah, we can do. Let's go with that then. I've watched some videos of it, because I didn't even try and find a way to play it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it just I think this is...
didn't seem feasible.
Yeah, I think as we've got sort of like portions of the way through this list, we have found out that a lot of these games you just can't get anymore, even if it's on like shareware or something like that. And weirdly enough, Dungeon Master is one of those games that has never had a re-release or a remake.
Which is, I can understand no remake. I'm surprised it's not been put on like a retro compilation or something along those lines, or like an Evercade cartridge done, or... I mean, an Atari wasn't the most... I suppose you've got the keyboard and stuff to play it. I suppose that's why it was probably not cut out for a modern day handheld console or something like that, but yeah, it's a surprising one because of how influential it has been that nobody has thought to go, oh, let's just churn this back out. We don't have to change much, but we can probably make a few quid on it.
Yeah, even though it can't be re-released on console, it could have been re-released on PC.
Yeah, easily.
They still all have keyboards. But I think it's probably because what it did has now been done by so many other companies and so many other video games and better and not necessarily more impactful, but they've added the nice graphics, they've added more coherent storyline, they've added better storytelling to it. Whereas this, despite the fact that it's quite an old game now, it's still very competently made for its time, but it is of its time. It's not something you could bring into the 21st century and sort of be like, oh, look at this, isn't this novel and amazing? Because you just sort of go, well, no, because Baldur's Gate's over here. That's essentially what you're trying to do, but a lot better.
Yeah, to bring it up to date, it would have to be something completely different to what it is, because it's so cutting edge in what it was doing back then. The whole flat experience of it trying to replicate 3D, I think you've just lost that these days. You wouldn't get away with it, would you? Because we're used to an actual 3D space now, so there's not really any call for this outside of trying to replicate a retro game in that style that a lot of people are doing now, where they revisit a retro style to try and make it feel old school, I suppose. You could envision this being part of another game, like a, I don't know, like a Saints Row or something, you know, where they do something a bit quirky and it's like you've got to play this little bit in this arcade cabinet or something like that.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Doom 2016 and the new Wolfenstein, where you sort of get bonus levels, which are slightly upscaled versions of the original Wolfenstein, so it's still the 2D, moving as if you're on roller skates, shooting sort of thing. But even... So sort of trying to bring this into the 21st century, stuff like Proteus and things like that have tried to replicate the old feel of Doom and the sort of like Metal Hellsinger and stuff like that. And even they pushed for slightly more realistic pixel art or 3D, full 3D graphics. So I think even though you're trying to hark back to retro style gaming, you can still sort of bring it into modern day with modern sensibilities. But I think with sort of Dungeon Master being like very Dungeons and Dragons-y, there's so many RPG Dungeons and Dragons video games these days that do what this does in 3D. So I just think it'd be lost amongst the rest of the pack, to be honest with you. I think it'd just get lost in the mix.
Yeah. I actually found out while I was looking into it that I'm pretty sure I owned a version of this. Now, I can't find out whether it was on Commodore 64 or not. But if it wasn't, I had a game that was practically the same game as this. It looked almost the same, it played the same. And I remember really liking it. I remember that being one that I played quite a bit of. I never got particularly far in it because I was only little and I didn't really know what I was doing. to explain it to somebody who's never played it before, you are essentially looking at one scene in a dungeon, and then you move left, right, forward, backwards, and it changes the scene. So either you move forward a bit, or you'll turn and face a different wall, or you'll turn, and every screen is like a different view of the dungeon. So you can go down corridors and take a left, take a right, all that kind of thing. And then there'll be keys to pick up. There'll be like secret bricks in walls that you can click with your mouse. And if you click the right one, it'll reveal like a key or something. You can search corpses on the floor, and some of them have equipment and keys. And it is very RPG based in that you can update your equipment, your weapons. You choose a crew when you start, don't you? So you build like a crew of, yeah. And there's lots of different types. There's like a dark magician, there's a warrior, all your standard tropes. And they all do different things. And in battle, you can use them in different ways. So you can have your warrior attack with a bare-handed punch or a weapon attack. You can have your dark wizard cast spells while you're in there. So every floor, barring a couple of them, I think are like pitch black. And you can either choose to light torches that you find, but they burn out eventually. Or you can cast a light spell if you've got a character that is able to do it. But there is like 20 degrees of light or something stupid like that. So you have to cast the spell like multiple times to make it really bright. Or you can just sort of have it so you can make out shapes if you don't want to waste too much mana. Or you can have it a little bit, and then gradually it will fade as you move around and you'll have to recast it. And it's that kind of thing. And then you're looking to pick up equipment, defeat enemies, and keep moving down to the next level and keep going through this dungeon to eventually get to the end of it. And it was fascinating to watch it, to be honest. I think it helped that the guy that I was watching play it really knew what he was doing, and he was just flying around it with, like, because you can see the button clicks on the screen, can't you? There's a little, like, a four-directional pad, and you can see every time the person presses the button which button he's pressed. And he was like, it was like he was playing a piano with them. He was like, and you could see the arrows lighting up and him moving around. And you have to be good at it to do that, because if you walk into a wall, you take damage. It's one of those kind of games where you literally press forward. If you're looking at a wall, you will take damage. And you have to manage food, you have to manage water, you have to manage rest. So it's got a lot going on for it, for a game from 1987, I think. It would give me a massive headache playing it, because you're constantly swinging the camera about and the backgrounds are constantly changing. And it's one of those where it is, even though you've got a little map, it's very easy to get lost when you're navigating around it, because everything feels like it's really close to you. So you're looking at a brick wall and you aim left, and then you're sort of looking at another brick wall with a corner, and you swing left again, and then you might have a tiny bit of open space, but then you're back in a corridor straight away. And yeah, it was, I enjoyed watching it more than I think I'd enjoy playing it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I get the feeling I'd probably not have got much of a kick out of it, because it introduced a lot of things that modern RPGs sort of take for granted. So the spell casting system, for example, you have to sort of memorize the runes that you need to select. So in order to conjure a fireball, which modern day games, you just have a spell called fireball. There are some slightly odd RPGs lately, such as, say, modern, like 2016, 2017. It was called Lichdom Battle Mage, and you had to combine two sort of spell cards that you had, and it created a different kind of spell. And this is kind of similar to that, because you have to combine a fire symbol rune with a wing rune, and it creates a projectile fireball rather than just casting like a wall of fire, where if you just use the fire rune, or you'd use the fire rune to light a torch. This actually allows you to manipulate different runes and combine them to sort of experiment with the kinds of magic you can get out of them, which I think is rather unique, really. Most modern video games, as I say, they just give you the spell. You don't have to sit there trying to work out, right, what's the logical way to create a fireball using these sorts of button inputs or these runes or these cards in front of me. You just get fireball.
Yeah, I think it's from an era of you'd play a game with a pad and a pen next to you, and what you found you'd write down, because the spells are on scrolls that you just find littered through the dungeons, and you don't take them with you as far as I can remember. You literally pick them up, read them, and chuck them back on the floor again. So yeah, like the light one, I think, was like four different runes, and you had to key them in every time you wanted to cast it. So you'd pick the character, key the four runes in off the little keypad with your mouse, and then it'd cast it. And you need to cast that quite a lot. So it was it was an interesting mechanic, but it was also a bit cumbersome as well, because especially in the heat of battle, I mean, the guy that I was playing as, when he knew that he was going to get into a fight, you can sort of pre-key it in, but not cast it. So he was picking his characters and keying in all the spells that he wanted to use when he got into battle, then engaging in battle and then starting to cast them and then keying it in again if he needed to. So it was one of those where it was a bit of a learning curve, I think, that most people would walk straight into battle and then go, oh, I need to figure out, where's my notepad? What's the fire? And by that point, you've probably been battered. It was one of those. And that was common in a lot of older games, wasn't it? If you weren't writing bits of information down, you were drawing yourself a map to try and figure out where you needed to go, because there wasn't a map in the games. And it's one of those Atari, Commodore 64 type era things that you always had a pad and a pen nearby just in case, because you didn't know what you were going to encounter. And it, as I said before, it looks like I would have enjoyed it. It's just now I couldn't go back to it now. No, like playing what I've played now, we've said this quite a lot, but back then, yeah, it would have been one of those wow moments, I think, when you loaded this up. Not just because of how it looks, because it does look different to anything you probably would have seen before it, but also how much there is to it. Because a lot of games back then were, you get 15, 20 minutes out of them.
Yeah.
And the challenge is that they are painfully difficult. So you invariably get to level 2 out of 5 and die. And it only takes you 10 minutes to get to level 5 if you're good enough, but you're not. So level 2, die, go back. Level 2, die. Oh, maybe level 3 next time. And that was where the gameplay came out of old games like that, in that you were just trying to get further and further without getting slaughtered. Whereas this still has an element of that, but it's the difficulty ramp is quite smooth if you know what you're doing with it and if you've picked the right combination of players for your party. So this was one of those games where there's loads of gameplay in one single run, and you didn't always get that back then.
Yeah, and I get the feeling that this was one of those that you, a bit Dark Souls-y, you had to get good at it to actually, you had to play it a lot. And as you say, notepad and pen, right, if I do this run with this combination of characters, I have a problem with this kind of enemy, so I need to change this character because he seems to die quite a lot. Mm. So I change him out and put this guy in instead. And like the equipment loadout and stuff like that, I mean, that is something that we massively take for granted today. And this game sort of spearheaded that concept of, I think it's called a paper doll interface, where you get a piece of gear associated with your character's sort of gear is sort of laid out on an inventory screen, and you get your helmet, you get a necklace or a tiara or a whatever, and then you get your shirt or your chainmail, and then you get your left bracer, you get your right bracer, you get your trousers, your boots, and each thing is sort of laid out into little squares. Even Dark Souls uses that sort of interface where you can select parts of your armor to either switch out or not wear entirely if you want to do a naked run. But yeah, I think that's the sort of thing that you wouldn't have expected from a game back then. That level of depth and complexity for something that could barely run a game that would, as you say, run for 15 minutes and that was you done.
Yeah, it's that is like fundamental to an RPG now, isn't it? Even if you look at like Mario RPG,
yeah,
you get the shirt, the hat, the boots that are all different and all have different abilities. And this is, I don't know if there was anything did it before this, but this is one of the earliest examples I can think of where it does that, and it does it with such a range of items. It's not just like there's four sets of boots in the game and you can just trade up between them. there's loads of different pieces of equipment. There's boots, there's, like you say, the chest piece, I think it is, there's the helmet, there's the weapon, the shield. All these things are all interchangeable, so you can create, along with the fact that there's like 8 characters you can pick from, the number of combinations of character and armor and weapon that you can end up with is massive, and finding out the one that works perfectly, like you said, is so trial and error that, yeah, you have to just keep playing it and figuring out what formula works. Now, I don't know if it had level seeds or anything, but the guy that I watched play it knew that run inside and out. He knew where all the keys were, he knew where all the weapons were, etc. So I don't know if it was just one run through. Do you know what I mean? Or whether you could do something to randomly regenerate it. I don't think it was an RGN game. So I think it is just, this is your start to finish and go at it. You know where the keys are on this level now. So again, playing into that memory thing, the more you play it, the more you know, oh, there's no point me going down that corridor because it's literally just enemies. I'm just going to lose health. I'll leave that and go somewhere else, and that kind of thing. Which, if that is the case, and I don't know 100%, even then, that's impressive for back then, to get that level of detail and that amount of gameplay onto one game for those consoles. Because, yeah, like I said and like you just said, I'm thinking of some of the games I used to have for Commodore 64. I think there was like a Scooby-Doo one that I had when I was younger, like a platforming game. And I used to play that so much. I played it for hours and I'd never get past the third level. And recently I was like, oh, I wonder how that game actually looks past the bit I could never get past. So I loaded up a full playthrough on YouTube and it was like 8 minutes long. I was like, are you joking? That game is 8 minutes. I spent hours on it and I watched the guy play it from start to finish and he wasn't particularly speedrunning it. And it was 8 minutes from start to finish, and that was the whole game. And you look at that and compare it to this, and it's no contest the amount of effort that was put into this and the amount of value for money you got out of buying it.
Yeah, and it sort of adds to that, the depth and the complexity of it, because there are mirrors in the game, aren't there? There are about 20 plus... 24, 25 mirrors, and each mirror contains a frozen champion, and shattering the mirror releases that champion and they become part of your party. So again, it allows for more diversity, but again, if you want to beeline for one in particular that you know gives you such an easy run, it's having in your head, right, this guy's the one that will make my run easy. I don't want to go and pick up the alchemist or whatever. I want to go and pick up the barbarian, and you just make a beeline for that particular mirror. So yeah, the coding that must have gone into this is beyond impressive for the time, to be honest with you.
And the thought to actually make it, like, and it's obviously been made by people who are massively into Dungeons and Dragons or tabletop role playing, and they've just gone, well, what do we love about this? How can we put it into a digital format back then? And I think they've done a brilliant job because it works so similarly. Obviously, you've not got the whole DM running the game and changing things up and rolling for... That's all done in the background. But yeah, it has that feel. I'm surprised that they didn't get any sort of license on it. But I know it's a time when licenses weren't thrown around and it didn't happen that much. But I'm amazed that the people who owned the Dungeons & Dragons license didn't play this and go, right, we want to make another version of it, but with all our characters and all our branding all over it, and charge more for it, because it would have worked so perfectly.
Yeah, and the injection of money from that, they'd have probably been able to go bigger and better, even if they'd done it as chapters or quest lines sort of thing, and each one that they released was like, oh, this is an expansion to the quest you've already done, and sort of give it a broad arcing storyline so you could sort of have that level of continuity, because I appreciate a lot of the save file transfer didn't really come in until the likes of Mass Effect.
Well, really? I was just going to say
have had the illusion of it, at least.
Well, I think you could do it, because I remember a couple of games I had where it was where you had to switch tapes to go on to the second part of the game. And what you do is when you got to the end of the first part of the game, it'd give you this big wall of text that was like, this is your code to move on. And then when you put the second tape in and loaded it up, you filled that code in and it essentially told it what you'd finish the first tape with, equipment-wise, personnel-wise, and then you just carried it on. So they could have done that. If they knew they were making more, they could have said at the end of the first tape, right, write this code down. When Chapter 2 comes out, you're going to need this. And then when Chapter 2 comes out, provided it's using all the same characters and weapons and etc., they could have just put the code in, and it basically, every letter of that code is a yes or a no switch on whether they had this piece of information, whether they had this character, and it rebuilds the end of the last game for you at the start of the new one. And you don't see that in modern games very much. Like Mass Effect is one of the ones that you just mentioned that I think that I remember them doing it. But I don't think that happens anywhere near enough these days. Like, I can't remember many games where it does. Like the new WWE games come out and I went to play the new like season mode on it. And I had to create my whole character from scratch again. And I was like, but my character from last year is there on the same console. Why can you not just pull it in for me? Why have I got to go through and make the whole thing again and try and get it to look the same? And it's little things like that that you just don't get anymore in games, when it probably would be quite easy to do it, I would think.
Yeah, and I think modern video games have got a really nasty habit of... And you know video games are these days are built with a sequel in mind. A lot of them are built with an intention of creating a franchise out of it. So they build this first game up where the main character has their full character arc, and they go from next to nothing, knowing nothing about the world, not being very good at what they do, and they have this whole character arc in the first game, and they become sort of like the champion by the end of it, and they've got all their skills, all their abilities, and they can kick so much ass because they're kicking the bad guy's ass. And then you start the sequel, and you are essentially left with a character that has no more character development left, because they've already done their character development in the first game, and now they're trying to make a hatchet job sequel to sort of go, oh, this character's now got this character development that we want, and we're going to have to introduce new weird abilities that they by all rights shouldn't have or shouldn't need to have. But because we want to try and crowbar a sequel out of this shit, we're going to have to give them another character arc so that they end up a little bit better. And then that's where I think a lot of sequels fall down, because that character has already done their full circle. They've already gone through a character change to make them a hero. And now it's like, what, do you want me to be more of a hero? Not sure how I'm going to do this.
I think the game that handled that best, in my opinion, I don't know if I've talked about this on here before, is between Saints Row 1 and 2. So at the end of Saints Row 1, your character, spoilers, but if you've not played it now, then Jesus, I mean, it's been out like 20 odd years. Your character is on a boat that gets blown up, and it sort of ends as if your character's died, and that's the big revelation at the end of the first game. And then when the second game starts, you've been taken to prison, so you survived. You've been taken to prison in like the medical wing in an induced coma, and the game starts with people trying to break you out, and you get to the character selection screen and you're essentially in a hospital bed, and you build your face and how you want yourself to look. And also they introduced being a female protagonist in the second one, which wasn't an option in the first one. So you can actually pick to be female and change all your style. And then when they break you out in one of the cutscenes, one of them even makes a comment that you like look completely different. Or I think if you change it to a female, they even say something along the lines of like, you look really different or something like that. And it sort of explains it all away, because you look different because you're in a horrific accident and they've rebuilt your face, and you don't know any of your moves because you've got a bit of amnesia and your muscles have wasted away a bit as well. So it all explains it quite well. And I think the Saints Row games do that quite well all the way along, because even at the end of that one, when you essentially become... So the end of the first game, you're the leader of the Saints. The second game, you then take over like the whole town, and you think, well, where are they going to go from that? And then in the third one, you take over like the entire planet, and you become like the president of America. So I think they realize, like you said, it's a problem that you don't have anywhere to go with the progression in a sequel. So they just keep making it crazier and crazier to mean that you are actually doing something more than you were in the previous one. And I like that, because I think it's Saints Row 3 starts where you're a celebrity. Like, the Saints have become celebrities in America, so everywhere you go, people recognize you and they're coming up to you asking for autographs and stuff. And it makes sense. It wouldn't make sense for you to start that game and go, oh, the Saints are just a nobody group again. Build yourself back up and then play essentially the same game over again, just with different graphics and stuff. So that's one of the few, I think, that have done it really well and where they needed to. Obviously, you get sequels like Sonic and Mario where it's not needed, because they're like a sitcom episode, aren't they, Sonic and Mario? You get the resolution of the arc at the end of the last one, and then the new one just starts and cracks on again. So, yeah, I agree that there's a lot of games paint themselves into a corner when they must know that there's a potential sequel coming out.
Yeah, I think one of the other ones that did it well, I think Golden Sun for the Game Boy Advance, that was another RPG. And that at the end, you got I think it was like a 13, 14 digit code. And bear in mind that Golden Sun New Dawn didn't come out for another 4 years after the end of Golden Sun. So they knew that they were getting a sequel out of it, and they knew that they'd designed the story, because it sort of ends rather abruptly and you kill one of the major villains. And then they just go, oh, the other one's f***ed off. Catch you in the next episode. And then they just bugger off for 4 years. And you just sat there hoping that you've written down this piece of paper. And I think it also went from Game Boy Advance to DS. So I think New Dawn went onto the DS. And it's like, so you've not only have you skipped 4 years that you've expected me to hold on to this, A, the cartridge, B, the book that I've written down the 14-digit code, but you've also moved it on a generation of consoles. And now you're expecting me to sit there and remember this code or have it still written down somewhere.
It's cool that they did carry on, though, because you'd think changing architecture would make it really difficult to implement that code. But the fact they've done it, I mean, I know we've gone off on this huge tangent, but how does Shenmue handle it? When you start the second Shenmue, does it remember like how much money you've got or any of that? Or do they basically just go, oh, he's gone somewhere else now, so he's back to square one?
I think, because obviously the plot of Shenmue is quite linear and it sort of holds you by the hand and drags you bodily through the shitty plot. I think it just, you get to the end of the game and your money or what have you doesn't carry over, but the overall character development doesn't matter a great deal because you've had that bit of the story, you've then got this next bit of the story, so there's not many decisions you can make in Shenmue that will affect the rest of the series, really. You have to get certain martial arts techniques to be able to complete the game, so I don't think they concerned themselves with it, really.
Right, back to Dungeon Master. What are we going to score it? I'll let you take the lead on this one. And then I'll chip in.
I think that without this, I think you would genuinely struggle to have most modern RPGs. That's a bit of a grand statement. I think without this making as much of a statement and as much impact as it did, I think the way 3D and first-person RPGs, how they developed, I think it would have taken a massive hit. And I think it would be further behind the curve than it actually was. So stuff like Final Fantasy VII and things like that, I think that sort of thing would have been so far pushed towards like the late 90s, the early 2000s. Whereas if this hadn't existed, I think most of the tropes that we have for RPGs, I just think we'd have been massively behind the times on it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, I know we don't always take into account the massive impact that things have, but that tends to be on games where we are vehemently against them in the first place, whereas this, I am not. Yeah. This looks quite fun. This looks like I would have definitely enjoyed it had I played it more when I was younger and understood what was happening. So as I say, if it wasn't this, I played something very similar and I just didn't know what I was doing. I was like, oh, it looks nice, but I'm just getting destroyed because I'm not old enough to know that I need to put this competent party together and use these items and stuff. to me, it was probably, I was just like playing an episode of Nightmare off the telly. And I was like, oh, it's like Nightmare, I'll play this. And that was probably as far as it stretched for me. I was thinking mid to high 60s.
Yeah, I had 67 in my head. 67, 68 was my sort of ballpark figure for it, really.
We'll go with 67 then, which is higher than Elite and Rez last week. I bet nobody saw that coming. And with that in the book, let's move on to Deus Ex, unfortunately, if we must. In fact, let's have a little palate cleanser before we do that. In a bit of a quandary here at Bucket List Gamers at the minute, because we've joined an associates program with a company called Geek Crate. So geekcrate.co.uk, I believe it is. And they sell mystery loot boxes for a whole range of different franchises. So the one that I bought, obviously, was Pokemon. And a friend of the channel bought the Star Wars one. And they also do... There's quite a few. I think there's a Marvel one. There's a generic anime one. I think there's five or six that they do. And they do different types of them as well. So there's a standard, a premium, a subscription model, all that kind of thing. So we've joined with them. And not wanting to just join something and shill it to people without knowing the quality, I ordered one. And to say the one I received was disappointing was a bit of an understatement. So I went for the premium Pokemon box, and it was, I think I ended up paying about 26 quid for it because I used our code. And if you use a subscribe option, you get money off and some extra items, and then there's no obligation to continue it. You can cancel it straight away. So 26 quid, and I didn't get really 26 quid's worth of stuff, I don't think. I mean, it was probably fairly close. So off the top of my head, what I got was, I did get a booster pack. You're guaranteed in the Pokemon to get a pack in every single one. And I got a Scarlet and Violet one, which is probably around the 4 or 5 quid mark, would you say?
Yeah, something like that.
So I got that. I got a single card, which was worth nothing. I think they just got a stack of single holos and just chucked one of those in. I got a pencil case, which was nice, although I have no use for that because I'm not 7 and in school. I got a printed out Silver Tempest, poster type thing, which was all right. I don't think I'll ever use it. I got a sticker. I got a little plastic Psyduck that is sub Christmas cracker quality, although it is still quite cute. I got a Squirtle necklace, which I found on AliExpress for about a quid each, but obviously they had to import them and all that, so fair enough. I got a nice Pikachu card wallet, little mini folder thing, which was quite nice. I'll probably use that. And what else did I get? I think I got a couple of other things, but I can't remember them off the top of my head. Anyway, I priced it all up, and I think it came to about 23, 24 quid, there or thereabouts. And I did get a full art out of the pack, so I did well on that. If I hadn't have got that, I'd probably have been a bit more miffed. So I wasn't massively impressed with that one, looking at it, and I was like, we can't talk about this, we can't really promote this because it was a bit rubbish. But then one of the friends of the channel, he got the Star Wars one. Now, this should have been 80 quid, and I think he ended up paying just about 50 quid using our discount code and the subscribe offer and everything. And he got loads of decent stuff in his. So he got a Funko that was worth about a tenner, a Funko pin, which was worth about 15, a Star Wars figure that's 20 odd quid, a talking Chewbacca plush, a mug, a tote bag, some socks. So I think there was a few other bits as well. A ruler, randomly, a fold out ruler that's got a Star Wars logo on, which was a bit strange. But he did really well out of his. So it seems to be really hit and miss on this. So I've got another box coming, because I forgot to cancel my subscription. When that arrives, I am going to see what is in that one and gauge my opinion on that, because if that is much better than the first one I got, then there may be some value in this. What we're saying at the minute is, essentially, if you want to go and use our code, if you've been looking at these anyway, because they are quite well publicised on Instagram and Facebook and that kind of thing, if you've been looking at these anyway and you want to get 15% off, and you want us to get a little kickback because we get money every time somebody uses our code, if you go to geekcrate.co.uk and use the code BLG, you will get 15% off your order, which when you combine that with the subscription discount and all that business, it does bring the price of them down quite a bit. So we don't want to say we fully recommend these and like push it on people, because at the minute we are really on the fence in how good of quality these actually are. But if you are considering it anyway, or if you want to buy something that helps us carry on and raise a bit of money, geekcrate.co.uk and use the code BLG will get you 15% off. As I said, not a ringing endorsement by any means, like we have been for our other sponsors. But if you want to help us out and want to get a bit of something for your money and let us know how you got on with it, there's the code. Use it as you will, I think is probably the best way to put it.
Sounds fair.
I mean, I don't know if you're tempted, Eddie. Probably not after my review of the Pokemon one.
I was going to say, I will see what your next Pokemon one comes through like, and if it is middling or decent, I will invest. At least then it gives us a bit of a kickback, and it's supporting another sort of indie channel.
This is it, because if it had just come and I'd paid 25 quid and I got what I got, I'd have sort of gone, it's there or thereabouts. My issue with it is if you go on the website and look at what they tell you you can get in that Pokemon box, I know it's obviously what you can get and not what you will get, but there is a lot of stuff on there that I can't imagine they ever send out in those boxes. There's like official Pikachu plushes that I know are about 20 quid. They've got pictures of them. There's like framed pictures and stuff, which I just don't think it's cost effective for them to send out. And that's where my issue lies with it. I'm not particularly disappointed with what I got. I think it was there or thereabouts for the price. It's more the fact that they're telling you you can get all this stuff that I just don't particularly think they send. And that's the bit for me that seems a bit shady. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, it's like those, because I've been an eBay user for decades now, and it's always those mystery boxes that you can buy, and it's like a random selection of 50. For me, it's holofoils, so it's cards. It's always cards on eBay, and it's like, oh, this random selection of 50 cards, and they show you high-end cards on the advert for it or on the little stills all the way through it. And it's always like they usually have like 20 plus stills on there, and each one is like a top tier expensive card. And again, like you, I know that I am not guaranteed that card, but if it isn't even in the pool of cards that you are sending out and it isn't 100% random, like you haven't just grabbed every single card in your collection, smushed them all together and gone, you're getting that one, you're getting that one, you're getting that one, and you just dole them out in that respect, don't put them on there.
Yeah.
I will happily pay, as a collector, I have bought bulk bundles before where it's like 20 holofoils for 5 quid. It's holofoils that I may not necessarily have,
yeah,
or that I don't even know exist without actually searching the serial numbers or the set that they came from. So I may get some that I pull and go, oh, that's a really nice art, or oh, that's the really nice full art, or what have you. I don't mind that. I do mind the shady, this is what we're advertising it as. And I know it's not verbally advertising it, but you are pitching it so that it is almost deliberately deceptive, and I've never been a particular fan of that.
No, I agree. I think it is the honesty aspect of it, isn't it? Which is why I didn't want to come on here today, why we didn't want to come on here today and go, oh, go to Geek Crate, it's fantastic, and use 15% off code, which is what you would get from, I'm not slating it at all, but a lot of channels would just probably not even buy it. Just go, oh, there's an affiliate program. Yeah. Is 15% off. We think this is great. Whereas I wanted to test it out for myself. Also, I wanted to buy it because I like this kind of thing. I love a little gamble. So I was like, I'll get that. And if it's good, we'll tell people about it, essentially. So that's why I didn't want to be all bells and whistles singing its praises when actually I'm not overly impressed with it. But when we get the second one, you never know. Like I say, it could be something good. And just to your point on eBay, there's one on Amazon, actually, that I've seen pop up multiple times. And I think it's 5 booster packs, random, in inverted commas, booster packs for 50 quid. And the pictures that they have on are Evolving Skies, Evolutions, and I think first edition Fossil.
So expensive.
Though. And it's like, you know for a fact, you know for a fact you're not getting any of those packs in that deal. And then you look at the reviews and it's like, I got 3 Fusion Strikes and 2 Shining Fates. And it's like, yeah, that's what I'd expect to get for that price.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just, you know it's too good to be true, but it, at the same time, it is a bit misleading. And I do know why they do it, because they're probably 1 in 10 people look at it and go, well, I can get a pack, an Evolutions pack for £50. And then they buy it and get rubbish, and then look and it says random packs, you're not guaranteed anything, and they realise what they've done, which I've sort of done before, not to that extent. So I can completely appreciate that. But yeah, there it is. That's the pitch for today's episode in terms of a sponsor. If you want to go and try it out, please be my guest, but just don't get mad at me if you get garbage and you're not happy with it. Would be my message. But back to the games, let's move on to something equally as disappointing. Deus Ex from 2000. Now, I did buy it, as I said. I did play it for a certain amount of time. I got through the terrible 15-minute forced tutorial, which, in fact, I don't think it is forced, is it, in this? Although, if you didn't play it, you would literally not know what you were doing. So you sort of have to do it.
Yeah.
But it is just so long-winded and drawn out. And like, it, there's bits in it where it teaches you the mechanic and then it really, really hammers it home and makes you... There's like a stealth bit in it. And if you aren't good at the stealth bit of it, you can be stuck in that bit for like 15 minutes just on its own. And yeah, I played through that. I played through a bit of the early stages of the game. And then I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm just going to watch somebody else play it for a bit as well, just to see what I'm missing, because so far I'm not blown away by this at all. And I watched somebody else play it, and it was the most boring game I have ever watched anyone play, I think. And all the comments on the video were like, oh, I love this game, one of my favourite games ever, it's brilliant. And somebody put, this is legit the best game ever. And then somebody, one person was fighting the good fight and argued and said, you're talking rubbish, this isn't the best game ever. You're looking at it through rose-tinted spectacles. And he's like, I didn't play it till 2019, and I still think it's one of the best games ever. And I'm like, well, something, you haven't played any other games then. Because if you've played that in 2019 and think it's the best game ever, something's gone terribly wrong.
Yeah, it's I've said it quite a lot on this channel anyway. It's one of those games that the people that have nostalgia for it are really, really familiar with the first hour to 2 hours of it, because you get so far in and go, Jesus Christ, I don't remember it looking this much like shit, but it genuinely does. The thing that gets me is, at the beginning, it asks you to put in a name for your character, doesn't it? It gives you the opportunity to put it in a name, and then goes, thank you for putting your name in. Actually, your character's name is JC Denton, and you go, what'd you fucking ask me for then?
It is. It's just dull. It is dull, dull, dull. It's dull graphics, which you can forgive for the era. But the gameplay is just... I watched like an hour of it, and I was like, nothing's happened. He's just been walking around doing nothing for an hour, skirting around the edges of buildings and stuff. And I can appreciate that they've built it in a way where you can play it in whatever style suits you best. So you can stealth it. You can go in all guns blazing. You can plant remote mines and use them instead. So there is a lot of choice in it. And I think I've played one of the sequels and I quite enjoyed that, where they'd refined the controls down and everything. But this, I just don't think is this masterpiece that everyone seems to think it is. And maybe it is because I didn't play it back then, and it would have been quite cutting edge for 2000. But before we started playing, I said to you, what year did Perfect Dark come out?
Yeah.
And that came out the same year. And Perfect Dark, the controls are so much tighter than this. You don't need to, as I said last week, be an octopus to play it, because you don't need like 10 other keys on the keyboard. It's all condensed down into one control scheme on Perfect Dark. And this isn't. And then I'd say Perfect Dark looks nicer than this.
Yeah.
It's very close. You can tell they're from the same era, but I think it looks nicer. It's far more action-packed than this is, unless I've just watched a really particularly boring hour or someone who doesn't know what they're doing, Those are the two potential reasons that the 1 hour which was so boring. But I just didn't get what the fuss was about. I didn't enjoy playing it because of the controls and how muddy it all looks. You'd think that they would have, even like, because the thing that I bought isn't the original, I don't think. It was, did they do a remaster or did they,
yeah,
like,
they did a remaster,
bring it to the modern age a bit? And it still looks really dark and gloomy and dull. And I just, yeah, it wasn't for me, even though I do like Perfect Dark, and I know I keep coming back to it. But that's, when I started playing it, I saw Perfect Dark, Soldier of Fortune, Half-Life type thing. When I turned it on, that was the impression I got from it. And I like Perfect Dark. I don't particularly love Half-Life. And I love Soldier of Fortune. So it should appeal to me. There are other games that are similar to it that I do enjoy. But this one I just could not get into at all.
No. I think one of the comparisons I always draw is Thief. Because this is a stealth action RPG, so it's about espionage, it's sort of a cyberpunk-esque future, but you are encouraged to do things in a stealthy way. And I always, whenever I get stealth games, I always instinctively draw either a comparison to Thief or a comparison to Dishonored, because I like Thief and I like Dishonored. I didn't like the remake of Thief. The remake of Thief was shit. But that's what I draw my comparison to. The world in Thief feels bigger and more like it's a living world, because you get the guards on random patrol routes, you're having to sneak past, you have to keep an eye on your visibility gem at all times, just sort of, have you been seen, have you been spotted, you knowing when to make a run for it and sort of vault up and climb up onto a roof. Whereas this, like you say, is just dry is the nicest way I can put it. I think, to put it in context for the listeners and people who haven't heard of Deus Ex before, because obviously the other two came out on the 360, so it was like a massive generational leap. Well, sorry, you had Deus Ex, then you had Deus Ex Invisible War, which again was PC, and then you had a massive wait until you had Deus Ex Human Revolution, which was the 360, and then Mankind Divided on, that was cross-generational. I think that was PS3, 360, and went on to the PS4 as well. So the original Deus Ex was made by Ion Storm, a company who also made Daikatana, which is universally regarded as one of the worst video games of all time. And I think both this game and Daikatana were made by the two leads from Doom. So Daikatana was made by John Romero. As the billboards all said on the lead up to Daikatana's release, John Romero is going to make you his bitch. And this was made by the other one that I can never remember the name of, but he directed this. And the two are polar opposites of each other. It's honestly like Ion Storm is bipolar as a development company. You can tell the influence of John Romero on the other one because it's fast-paced, it's action, it's over-the-top gore, violence. I think it was an 18 Daikatana when it came out. Whereas this is just so... John Carmack, I think, was one of the leads on this, who was the other one to John Romero. And you can just tell the philosophies are so different, because you would look at it and go, that's obviously from, like, I don't know, EA or something like that with Daikatana, and this just looks like it was made by a PC nerd in his bedroom, because this is what he likes. He likes sitting there pretending that he's coding all the time, or he's hacking all the time, and this is his idea of a great game. And you just look at him and just go, well, they're both awful, but... yeah, in different degrees.
I think I'd rather play Daikatana, if I'm honest. At least that's funny bad. Like, you can get some enjoyment out of how funnily bad it is. This is just, dry is the perfect word to describe it. It's just so, and there are good bits to it, don't get me wrong. There's, like, you can see good ideas in there. Like, because it's similar to, I think there is a little bit of a theme tying the games together today, because this is an RPG first person shooter, isn't it? So you can gain experience points and increase your stats and that kind of thing. But it's so much effort to get into that stage of it that I wasn't interested in doing it by the time I got there. I was just like, no, I'm just going to carry on. I'm not bothered. I'm not reading skill trees and all that, trying to figure out where this point would best be placed. I'm just going to carry on with it. And when you look at something like Skyrim or Fallout, where you're genuinely excited to get that next level up, to figure out what attribute you want to put it in or what skill you want to unlock and the pros and cons of each one. Compared to this, it was just like, oh, you've got a point now. I suppose I'd best go and spend it. Not that particularly interested. And it just, yeah, I don't get those people that were saying it's the best game ever. I don't know. I assume they weren't trolls because there was a lot of them. But it just, I can't even fathom how you could ever play this game and go, best game ever, that. It just the difficulty to play it alone should be enough to put you off with the control scheme and whatnot. But even if you can look past that, nothing happens. Nothing happens in it. It just drags on and on.
I think that the ones that celebrate it massively are the ones that remember that it even on the best PCs back in the time, it used to run like an ocean liner on gravel anyway. It was so slow, and it used to make your processors overheat and stuff like that. It was one of those games that makes or breaks your PC or sets the standard for how good your PC is. One of the reviews I read said that it was like a four video gaming genres crammed into one. So it's a role-playing game, it's first-person shooter, it's action-adventure, and it's immersive simulation, because nothing reminds you that you're playing a video game while you're playing it. And you just go, are you f***ing kidding me? Everything reminds you that you're playing a video game because you're having to hotkey about 14 different options. The graphics look like shit.
That's the other thing that got me about it as well when I was playing the tutorial. So it's in-game, the tutorial, isn't it? It's not like it pops up on screen. Yeah. There's like a guy following you saying, do this, do that, do this. But then he speaks in control terms. So he'll go like, oh, don't forget to right click to equip your wetsuit. And in the context of the game, what does that mean? Like, what press W to put that away. Well, what do you mean press W? I'm just a normal human stood here with a key in my hand. What does press W mean? If you're going to build in a tutorial where there's a real world person telling you what to do, just get him to go unequip that and then put a prompt on the screen saying press W to unequip. Don't get him to actually say the words, press this on your keyboard, when you're just meant to be a normal person. It was just, that was so jarring to hear that. Every time it happened, I was like, right, well, that's completely took me out of any semblance of moment I might have had with this game. That's just snapped me straight back out of it again. It wasn't, in case you can't tell, I wasn't a fan. I mean, I think I paid £2 for it, and I'm begrudging the fact that I did that. I'm going to have a look and see if I've played 2 hours worth, because if I haven't, I think I'm just going to claim it back on Steam, because I will literally never turn this game on again.
I think one of the things you can say about this game, to its credit, is that, as you said earlier, it allows you to approach the game in any sort of way you want. If you want to do stealth, that's fine. If you want to focus on hacking, that is fine. As long as you don't sink all your points into, I don't know, tap dancing or something, in case there's a tap dancing concept. I don't think there is a tap dancing option, but you know what I mean. As long as you don't put all your points into something ridiculous, you are going to be able to play the game whatever way you choose. And that goes as far as the bosses as well. So all of the bosses, you can get into the room, they pull out a massive minigun when you've been sort of building up this little stealth guy or this hacker, and you can just go, nah, f*** that, and you can just run out the door and just bypass the boss fight. You don't have to engage them, you just go, nope, flipping him the bird as you go and just leg it out the door. So it is good in that respect. It's just everywhere else that you just look at it and go, it's too much. You've tried to cram too much into it, but at the same time, nothing happens. It's like the Justice League film all over again. The Snyder Cut of the Justice League. There's so much of it, but nothing happens.
Yeah, it is exactly that. It's it's a 10-hour game that could have been a 5-hour game, or whatever, however long it actually takes to beat it. It could have been done in half the time with things just put closer together. It's just, I mean, another game that I would... There isn't a direct comparison to it, but when you look at the graphics and stuff, you can sort of see it. Is Max Payne, for me, I looked at the graphics and I thought it's very Max Payne era, that type of graphics. But in Max Payne, everything's just there. You go into another door, there's people shooting at you, you shoot them, you go into another... Then you get that weird dream sequence where you're walking along like bloody paths and there's a baby crying, and then you get back into it and you're doing more shooting and quick time and stuff, and those like bullet time things. It's just fun to play as soon as you start playing it, and there's never this massive bit of exposition. But this doesn't even have that. It's not like the downtime is exposition. It's just walking to somewhere or skirting around a building that there's got nothing on it, but you're skirting around it because you think, well, they must have hid something over here. Oh, no, there's nothing there. Let's just crack on to the next bit. And it's just, for large swathes of it, a nothing game. And I think that's the worst thing you can do as a game developer, is make something that's boring. You make something that's bad, but it's like that Walking Dead game from Game Mill. It's terrible. It's a horrific game, but it isn't ever boring because there's always something to laugh at or make fun of, or do you know what I mean? It isn't boring. It's terrible, but it's not boring. And I'd much rather play something like that than this. It just doesn't do it for me at all.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think they took that sort of concept or criticism. I dare say they didn't get much criticism levelled at them based on the opinions of all the people that love this game. but in sort of like Human Revolution and Mankind Divided on the 360, they filled every section of the game with tedious bollocks. Every window, pretty much every window you can interact with and break into someone's house. There's nothing to do when you're in there, or you can pick up some money, but that's it. Or you can hack into their computer and read their emails between them and their girlfriend. I was like, I wouldn't even be entertained by this as a TV program, let alone something that I am forcing myself to go through to try and get to the next thing. But yeah, it's like they took all those concepts of big open world, but the big open world didn't have anything in it in the last one. So we're going to have to put stuff in it. And what they filled it with was just packing peanuts.
Yeah.
The original game was just a big box with a couple of bits in. And this one is just a big box with a couple of bits in. They've just poured packing peanuts on top of it and gone, it's a game, there we go, we'll leave that with them.
I must admit, I liked the sequels more, but then that's not saying much. I have played the 360 one, probably. The first one on 360. And I remember not hating it. But I also remember, I think I got that and I got, was it Inhuman at the same time? And I much preferred that. So I just went that route instead and played that a lot more. And yeah, it's just like you say, it's just a lot of nothing, I suppose. And if people enjoy it, then great. I mean, it probably appeals more to those with the meticulous nature for playing games, where you can control every aspect of things, because you can't you? The skill tree is very detailed. You can, the way you heal yourself is you literally pick body parts to heal and that kind of thing. So if you've only got so much medipack ability and something's took both your legs out and you're currently crawling along the floor, you can choose to just repair your legs and not bother with your arms or whatever it is. It is that level of detail, which, to its credit, I've not seen that done many other places, I don't think, where you get the limb damage to the extent that it impedes you. I know that, like, Fallout and stuff, you can get your arms injured, can't you? And it sort of does, like, you lose, like, damage to your weapons or something, don't you? But in this game, literally, if your legs get taken out, you have to crawl until you can find a med pack or get killed, which is something I don't recall seeing in another game. Like I say, Fallout will slow you down, but you're not physically on the floor, like dragging yourself through corridors, which was pretty cool, I suppose.
Yeah, and with stuff like Fallout, you just take a stim or you take a health pack and it heals all of you. You don't need to like select limb.
I think you can, can't you? If your limbs do get mangled in Fallout 3, I think you have to use a stim specifically on an arm. Yeah. But that's only if they get to like the point of no return and they get like wounded. But yeah, like you say, normally you take a stim pack and it reinvigorates your health in general, unless they get absolutely mangled. Whereas this, each limb gradually deteriorates, doesn't it, if you take damage to certain areas. Although the tutorial is a bit weird because you get into some toxic water and that injures your leg and nothing else, which I don't get that. That didn't make any sense to me, but that's how they chose to introduce that mechanic to you. After they told you to right-click yourself to equip your hazmat suit, they taught you how to target just your leg that had got injured by the toxic water that you'd fully submerged yourself in. So score-wise, I'd be pushed to give it over a 50. I just did not like it whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see people with pitchforks.
I know, but I don't get it.
I don't particularly care.
If they can explain to me what is so good about this game, I'll consider changing my opinion. But I literally fell asleep watching the video of someone playing it. I watched about 45 minutes and I woke up and it was on the hour mark and it looked like he was still in the same place. And I'm pretty sure I'd been asleep for 15 minutes and nothing had changed. So unless that 15 minutes was the most action-packed section of gameplay on YouTube, nothing went on while I was watching it. So I just can't. I can't bring myself to give it anything remotely high because I just didn't enjoy it whatsoever. And if you do enjoy it, yeah, brilliant. That's more power to you. There's games that I absolutely love that everyone hates, and I'm quite happy in accepting that. But this is just not one that I could ever play myself and enjoy.
No, I think the most action-packed the game actually gets is if you're trying to do a stealth run, which is saying something, because you get a tranquilizer gun with unlimited ammo, and when you shoot the enemies with the tranquilizer gun, rather than just sort of recognizing that they've been shot before collapsing to the floor unconscious and like for a no kills run, they get hit and then they run around screaming, which isn't very tranquil, to be quite honest with you. So they just run around screaming for a bit and then fall over. And that's about as action-packed as the game gets. And that's when you're trying to do it stealthy, which I just don't get.
Which puts in mind, for me, Siphon Filter, which, again, did it way better than this. I'd much rather play Siphon Filter with your trank gun and your taser and whatnot than this. That was, again, much more fun. So, I mean, unless you want to give it more than 50.
I do not.
I mean, how low do we go? That's the only question now. We've put a ceiling on it. How much lower do we go?
I really didn't like it. Didn't like it Tetris level? Didn't like it? Or
I think this is a, like I said, being boring is the worst thing you can do in a game for me.
Yes.
And it's saying something that I couldn't even enjoy watching someone else play it. Normally, even if I don't like a game, I can get enjoyment out of watching someone else playing it and commentating over the top of it. And with this, I couldn't even do that. It just, I was like, I turned it off. I just stopped watching it. And I reckon I could probably watch someone, if I liked them enough, I could probably watch someone play Pac-Man for an hour and enjoy it. But this, I couldn't. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, I think the problem with boring, bland games like this is they're hard to praise, for a start, but at the same time, they're hard to criticise.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing to criticise, and I'm not saying that in a good way. I'm not saying it like, oh my God, it's that good, I literally can't criticise anything about it. It's that boring. One, I don't know where to start. And two, nothing happens. So how can you criticise something where it's that boring that nothing happens?
Do you know what? I'm tempted to break the mould after, 94 games or something and just give this an NA, because I can't, in good judgment, say anything about it. Like you said, it's not a bad game. It's just not anything.
The stuff like Ride to Hell, Retribution, and the other games that we've dealt with while we've been discussing these last 94 games that have been bad, but they've been bad because they've tried to do something, like Duke Nukem Forever, tried to do something and failed at it miserably. There's still humour to be gleaned from that. There's still a tiny bit of entertainment where you can go, this game thinks it's cutting edge and it's utter shite. Or the ones that have just not had the skill, like Gollum, they've tried to do something, but they've not had either the funding or the ability there, or they're a startup indie company. This has got the pedigree of Doom developers behind it, and they just made something so insultingly bland that it's offensive to stuff like that you do want to give zero to, because that has brought out an emotion in you, such as Jesus Christ, this is awful, or the resentment or the anger. This just makes me go, meh, and want to turn over.
Like you said, they've tried something new, so commend them for that.
Yeah.
And they've not done it badly. It's not like you can say they've implemented the skill trees badly, or they've implemented the stealth badly, or anything like that. You can't even really say they've implemented the controls badly, because at the time, on a PC game, that was how it played, using the hotkeys and stuff. So you can't even say that about it. The only thing you can say about it is that they've implemented it in, like you say, such a bland way that I can't get excited about all those good things they've done, because there's no way to really put them to any good use. So, I mean, if we're not giving it an NA, I think a 50 is a fair score, like literally straight down the middle, to say it's not good, but at the same time, it isn't bad either.
Yeah, when you're struggling to praise the good bits, but at the same time you're struggling to get worked up and angry, and like we've had some venomous episodes on this channel where we've sat there and we have slated it. I don't have the energy to slag this game off, really, and get properly worked up about it. It just doesn't affect me. It just falls right off the edge of my critical spectrum and just goes into the Sarlacc pit of video games that I'm just like, I don't care. I just don't.
The only thing that's got me worked up about it is just how much praise it gets for something that is so dull. I feel like I'm missing something. I'm almost mad at myself for not being able to see what everyone else sees in it. And like, I'm almost like, is there something wrong with me? Like, do I deserve people with pitchforks coming after me for not understanding why they love this game so much? But I just can't get it. There's nothing there for me. And I think that's the frustrating thing. And that's why I'm getting a bit worked up about it. Because aside from putting actual buttons into the tutorial, it's not really done anything to offend me. It's just not done anything to wow me either. So I think the 50 is a fair place. And that's probably a bit harsh to stuff that we've put below 50 that is more interesting than this. I mean, Tetris, I think, is genuinely more interesting than this. I wouldn't want to play it, but I think it's probably more interesting than this. This, I just don't feel like I will. Like I said, if I can get a refund on it, I'm getting it, because I don't think I will ever turn this on again.
I think one of the fairest things to say, to put it into context, is a couple of weeks back, a young lad finally completed Tetris, the original Tetris. And it gets to a point where the game just crashes. It can't comprehend it. There are too many numbers, too much stuff is happening. It just crashes the game, but that is officially the end of the game. And I think he was about 10 or 11, finished the game of Tetris. And that made me go, well done. Genuinely, that is an impressive thing for someone, after all this time, to have finally completed Tetris. Do you know what? Fantastic. If I heard that someone had done something miraculous on Pac-Man, for example, again, I'd be impressed. If it came down to it and someone said, oh, someone's managed to complete Deus Ex in under an hour and a half, I'd just be like, the only thing that's impressive about that is how they've managed to get to a point where they are that much of an expert in Deus Ex that they've got it down to an hour and a half's worth of gameplay, because that's just depressing.
What I'd probably say is, where's the video? I've got an episode to do on this. And that sounds like the quickest way to watch it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they're lucky. If they can get it done in an hour and a half, then they're lucky because they don't have to spend any more time on it. So, yeah, 50, it's gone in at a 50, which I do feel a bit bad for other games. We've said this before. I think we're probably going to have to do an episode once we finish this 100 where we reevaluate the list. So just get the whole list in front of us and go, are we happy with the score we've given this in relation to everything else on it? Which could be a hell of a long episode. But I think we probably need to do it. So we will do a reevaluation episode at some point. But that's today's games marked off. And that brings us down to, let me just do the ceremonial crossing off of the list. We are down to 4 games. One of them we have nothing to say, and we probably should have tried to incorporate into this episode, if I'm honest. Because all the others, we've got quite a bit to say about them. So that'll be a fun one. I'm wondering if we should potentially play Bluey for that episode and then just mention that game at the end of it. But we will figure it out and see how we're... I mean, we've not played it yet, so we might play it and it might be brilliant and we pull an hour out of our arses to talk about it. And it's absolutely fantastic, but I'm not holding out much hope. So all that is left for me to do is to thank our Patreons. We have got in the couple of coins tier, we have got Lee. In the bucket kicker tier, we have got Ric Flair. And in the Avatarnish tier still, because he hasn't downgraded after getting his avatar, which we are incredibly thankful for, we've got the Sweaty Llama. So yes, thank you to all our Patreons. And if you want to join our Patreon and hear, there is an exclusive episode up on there currently, and we'll be there for at least another 3 weeks. There is also an exclusive soundbite on there, which explains why Eddie randomly started laughing during a fairly innocuous sentence in last week's episode. So if you're curious why that happened, you can go over and check that out as well. It is patreon.com/bucketlistgamers. And both of those are available on every tier as well, because it was our special 1 year episode, the Ask Me Anything one. So we did open it up to every tier. So for just £2.50, you can listen to both of those at your leisure. And early. So if you want to do that, please head over there. It would mean the world to us. And if not, you'll probably get to hear the episode in about a month's time, but you will never, ever find out why Eddie was laughing. And if that's not enough of a hook to draw you into spending £2.50, I don't know what is. Needless to say, he's not recovered from it yet.
Oh, dear.
But unless you've anything from the gaming world to talk about, is there anything else come up this week? I know we've gone over a bit, but I'm happy to edit it if there's anything that you want to cover that's happened. I don't think much has it? Princess Peach, whatever it's called, has got a playable demo, but I've not had a chance to play it yet, so maybe we'll talk about that next time. Anything else?
Well, other than the fact that, ironically, and I do remember this from earlier today when I was like, oh, we're talking about this later, Deus Ex 4 has been cancelled.
Oh, well.
The sequel, the next one that was due out in the next couple of years, Square Enix have come out and cancelled it. So, yeah, no longer in development, just gone.
I shan't be burning through many tissues tonight with that news. Actually, that sounds terrible. Just don't take that out of context. I meant crying.
Oh, that's getting soundbited.
Not if I have anything to do with it. I'll cut it out. So, yeah, nothing else really to cover. Next week's episode might be a little bit late because I am away in Harrogate for a week going to a gaming convention, which is a perfect opportunity to plug our sister podcast, Bucket List Board Gamers. There's a bucketlistboardgamers.com. You can check out that podcast, which covers the more board gaming side of it. And also one of the Bucket List Board Gamers, Matthew, has got his own Twitch channel and he's started streaming some board gamery video games. So if you want to check him out, he is MattWilson87 on Twitch. This morning while I was working, I was watching him playing a couple of deck building games. One of them called Baltro, which is fairly new out, I believe, and it looked quite interesting. It's like poker, but you can cheat essentially. So you buy booster packs and they have cards that affect the hands you play. One of them, for example, will times any face cards by 2 whenever you play them, and each round you have a target of points to get to, and you can play X amount of hands, It looked really fun, and it's about 12 quid, so I think the chances are I'm probably going to end up bloody buying it. If I can get my 2 quid back from Deus Ex, I'll probably invest it in that instead. But yeah, with that out the way, and no other gaming news, we haven't played Bluey yet, but it's coming. It's on the list, we've just not found time to do it, so we will be doing a special Patreon episode on that as well. But with that said, I think it's probably time for me to say that's goodbye from me.
And that's goodbye from me.